Ingram Smith, Bud Elliott, back again for another episode of the Nolcast. Bud, we have a defense coordinator hire to talk about. We've got a decent amount of declarations of kids that are leaving early for the draft. A couple more coaches that we can officially list as the pieces that will ultimately make up the composition of Willie Taggart's staff. Got a decent amount of things to jump in and catch up on tonight. So I know you've been out in Texas for the Army All-American game. We'll certainly cover the recruiting angle as well. So a nice little podcast that we have in store for people, hopefully. Want to take a minute, remind you that Louisiana Hot Sauce is the group that makes podcasts like these possible. Fantastic partner for us. Wonderful product. Three simple ingredients. It's about as effective a way as you can to spice up a meal, and certainly a friendly budgetary option as well. So just want to remind people of our partnership, one that we're very fortunate to have with Louisiana Hot Sauce, and we will jump right in. You want to start with talk of the defense coordinator?
Yeah, I think so. A lot of folks wanted us to jump in and do an instant reaction podcast, but I was at the Army All-American Bowl, and so I wasn't able to do that, obviously, but Willie Taggart went ahead and hired Harlan Barnett, and that's a hire that got a lot of love on social media from people who have played for Barnett, from people who have worked with him. Certainly, he's been involved with either as a position coach or as a coordinator of a lot of really good defenses at Michigan State. 51 years old from Cincinnati, played at Michigan State, played, 7 years, I think, in the NFL, has actually played for Belichick and for Parcells, two guys who had some pretty good defenses for a while, and then was also on the 2003 staff with Jimbo Fisher, which is actually why he was a name that was briefly brought up back in back when we were talking about Jimbo's potential hot board there. It looks like he was calling plays for the last couple of years on the defense, which is good because I know that was a question when Pat Narduzzi left to take the Pitt job, and I think it'd be a good hire. Recruits do seem to like him. Ingram, I know one thing you were talking to me about earlier, and I think it's a great point. Michigan State has had really good defenses, but they don't recruit nearly at the level of a Florida State or an Ohio State or somebody like that. And that's encouraging when you think about his ability to identify talent and to to offer that talent and to get it coached up and to play at a high level. They've had a number of draft picks come out of there. I think this is a good hire, especially if you were not going to be able to pay in that sort of new craziness range of that, $1.7-2 million.
The new reality that is a defense coordinator.
And was there interest in Mel Tucker of Georgia? Yeah, I think so. I absolutely. But can Florida State afford to pay SEC money without the the SEC network doesn't exist yet. The SEC network's raking in cash for these schools. That's they're kind of playing in a different level there, as far as financials for assistant coaches in some regards. So just something to think about there. But I think it's a really good hire. And I think the kids are going to be excited. He's also a guy that their guys play with good technique at Michigan State. And we can wonder, okay, was he calling the defense here? Was he calling the defense there? It looks like the last 2 years he was. But he's been their DB coach since 2007 under D'Antonio. They've had really good DB play in the last decade. A lot of that is, on him. So that's very encouraging because FSU's coach, your defensive backs this year, They did not have good technique. We talked about that. I mean, heck, the post-Miami show was almost entirely about how guys were playing with such poor technique and alignment and whatnot that they were running into each other and letting Berrios run free. So an interesting hire, and I think a good hire.
A guy, I think the technique of the position overall will jump significantly. A guy who I like what he does from a schematic standpoint. We can talk about that briefly. Maybe in another pod we could go maybe do a 5 or 7 minute deep dive into his personal philosophy. Really love the things that people who have played for him have to say. He's a really good coach. He's a great motivator. I also think he's a hell of a mentor for a lot of kids. So a lot of things that I really like about this hire, and I think Florida State in 2 to 3 years, when you look back, I think this will be judged as a significant piece and a really solid addition to Taggart's first staff. I don't want to bog us down on this, Bud, but I do want to spend a couple minutes just with a general idea as to what it costs for a defense coordinator right now, and maybe have us just circle back to the resource conversation, and as far as how it's tied to what the you know, just the soaring market, what the new market is for getting one of these elite defensive coordinators, particularly getting a quote-unquote elite defensive coordinator that, you know, a school, whether it be oil money or a TV network, whatever it is, when you get tangled up with a school that also wants the same person and is in a place that can write a check for 1.75 or 1.9 annually for a defense coordinator.
If Florida State's going to continue to compete, they have to have this ACC network get off the ground, I think, to be honest, because it's not like a bunch of donors are going to come from out of nowhere. But look, there's no doubt that they can't afford to pay, you know, $2 million for a DC like A&M did or like, you know, LSU just did. Now, part of that's just because you have two SEC West rivals getting into a pissing match, mm-hmm, you know?
Exactly.
There's only so many jobs that can pay that kind of money. And there's only so many, you know, spots that they can offer. So it's not like you won't be able to find a good coach just because you can't pay X dollars, right? It's not like people are going to start paying their position coaches more than FSU pays coordinators. And at some point, this bubble will burst. A lot of people don't like Dan Wolkin, all right? And I agree. Sometimes he does some stuff that's kind of trolly. I've always found him to be, you know, okay in person. He wrote a hell of an article today for USA Today, and I forgot what it's called, but just, you know, go on Dan Wolkin's Twitter, and he talks about how, you know, kind of the undercurrent of college football maybe being in trouble a little bit with, you know, it's different. And he got some quotes from, like, Mike Slive and some other people involved in NCAA stuff, and they said, look, paying, you know, assistant coaches this much money when they're not the face of the program, when they don't, you know, bring in other students for you, when they're not, you know, they're not like the PR side that the head coach does.
Mm-hmm.
When you're still not paying the players anything, it's just not a good look. And at some point, there's going to be some kind of blowback in this. And I think that you know, more than the $5 million head coach, maybe the $2 million defensive coordinator is something that's going to get people up in arms.
Yeah, interesting angle to it. I mean, I think if you're Florida State, the real, you know, the real fundamental aspect of this conversation is do you have enough resources to be competitive? I personally think the answer to that is yes.
Yes.
And and just think it's an example of how you have to be smart with it. In my opinion, is this guy one of the top four defense coordinators in the country or something like that? I don't know. I don't think there's necessarily a track record that you can say that. But I think this is a really good hire, and a strange to say that a value hire is somebody that almost is making $1 million a year as a coordinator. But for like your non-dominant head coach coordinator hire, or basically what I'm trying to say is the coordinator who complements the head coach's other side of like his natural background. I think this is a really good piece, and for the money spent, I think Florida State is in a place to get a really good return on what they've done with Barnett here.
Yeah, absolutely. As far as scheme-wise, what does he do? Well, Michigan State is primarily a cover four type scheme, so that's a split safety coverage. Now, against the spread stuff, a lot of times that basically converts to man-to-man. They are pretty aggressive. They are a heavy, heavy press team. They make and they play press with good technique, by the way, which is going to be a welcome change in some regards. To what you've seen at FSU over the last 2 years. They press a lot. They will blitz. I don't think they're a crazy blitz team. Like, they're not one of these, you know, teams that's just blitzing all the time, but they are aggressive. They're not a sit back, you know, try to see if the offense will make a mistake type thing. They are basically trying to dare the defense to execute difficult plays. Now, the upside to that is that you're going to have more three and outs. You're going to probably have more turnovers to the extent that you can, you know, control for turnovers. And we know turnovers have a certain luck element. You know, if you're putting pressure on the offense, maybe that forces some more bad decisions from the quarterback. The downside is that you'll allow some big plays, certainly, which, hey, if you're going to run an up-tempo offense, you would like to get the ball back to your offense pretty much any way you can do it. Now, preferably via turnover or three and out, not by giving up a big play. But that's – every defense has a weakness, right? And every defense has a strength, and that's kind of what they do. But I expect FSU to have a well-coached secondary, and they'll probably continue to be able to recruit beasts up front, and that'll help them even more. You know, they'll use, at least at Michigan State, they based out of a four-down alignment, which I know is going to be interesting with Odell Higgins as far as him. I think he's going to coach D-tackles. I don't think he's going to take tackles and ends. if they're going to run a 4-3. That's 16 guys in a position group. That's a lot you have to deal with.
I really don't maybe not possible is the right phrase. I don't think that's a good idea, and I'm as big of an Odell Higgins fan as anybody, but in my opinion, that's a guy who is as good as anybody in the country as at what he does, and I don't think there's a reason or a want to ask more of him. I think you let that guy focus on the defensive tackles, and you have a traditional ends coach. Now, maybe you have an end outside backers coach or something like that, but I do not expect Odell Higgins to be tasked with coaching the entirety of the defensive front.
No. I think with the new 10th coach, the new 10th assistant coming on, man, there's just no – I don't see there's a whole lot of guys taking a whole secondary or a whole defensive line of 15, 16 guys on scholarship. That's just a lot of guys you have to coach. Doesn't make a whole lot of sense to me. So, you know, just thinking about that, I don't think that's gonna happen.
You want to move to the next hire? I think, we could either talk offensive line coach, but just for sake of continuation and continuity, why don't we talk about Alonzo Hampton real quickly?
Yeah, certainly. It's going to have a prominent role on special teams. I've seen some people reporting that he's only going to coach special teams, and I don't necessarily care what the guy's title is, but logically, if you're only spending like 3 out of 20 periods in practice on special teams, which, look, most teams are not spending more than 20% of your time on special teams, what do you think the guy is doing for the other 80% of the time? Well, he has experience coaching defensive backs. Do you think he might assist with the defensive backs when the D coordinator walks around practice and looks at the other units? Because Barnett has experience coaching DBs. If you wanted to, you could actually go hire another DB coach, depending on how you allocate stuff on offense. We'll have to see about that. But this idea that he's only going to coach special teams and he's going to spend the entire practice on special teams, guys, that's just not how practice works. That's not how college football is done.
Right.
You know, the NFL is different. The NFL, you can have like a zillion coaches if you want to, and you can have a kicking coach and a punting coach and everything in between. In college with 10 assistants, you need that guy working. You're not doing special teams the entire practice. So I don't know. I've seen that suggested, and I don't buy that at all.
A hire that we mentioned on the last podcast and something that was pretty expected, but something we can speak to with formality at this point, Greg Fryer has been hired as your offensive line coach. And not only that, we've kind of discussed him briefly, Bud, but also a little bit of a unique wrinkle in things here in the fact that he's got some experience following Rick Trickett after he's parted and been an offensive line coach at another school previously.
Yeah, I think that is a really cool little wrinkle here. He's the guy who followed Rick Trickett at West Virginia. So if you're Greg Fry, and I'm sure you have a ton of respect for Rick Trickett, obviously, who's, you know, enormously successful as an offensive line coach, you already understand Rick's terminology and what he said to these kids last year. And that's big time. Anytime a coach comes in and says, hey, what did you guys call this last year? You know, if I said this to you, what does this mean? You know, what about this? Do you understand what this term means? He's not going to have to do that as much because he's going to understand what Rick was telling these kids, right? Because he's already done it. Like that's actually, I think, a pretty good advantage for him coming in. You know, he did tackles and tight ends at Michigan. Recruits really like him. I feel like we don't need to discuss this quite as long because of the fact that we did talk about this on our last show and said, hey, he could be hired, you know, any minute now, maybe even by the time the podcast was out. And I think that's actually what happened, isn't it? Like, he was hired on the day that the show came out or the next day, one of the two. So that's – I think that's a pretty cool thing. I don't know if folks realize that. But that's – I think that's going to be a big help for him. I think that's a dynamite hire. Recruits really like him. A guy who played for Michigan really likes him as well. So it's good, man. I think the staff is coming together in a nice way. There's a report tonight from Peter Aries of Kane's Insight. I don't want to say the rumors thing like some people seem to like to do. Because a lot of people label us as rumors, then we end up being right. That Ron Dugans is going to stay at Miami. So that's obviously a blow because Florida State certainly wanted him. But if he's going to stay, he's going to stay. I don't know exactly what the reasons are for staying there or not. I don't think it's a thing where Florida State got outbid. In fact, I'm pretty sure FSU offered him a nice package. You know, there are reasons why you might not want to move your family, you know, back to Tallahassee, even though he's from there. And Miami's a great place to live as well. So, all the best to Ron Dugan, certainly. I think he's a good coach and somebody Florida State would like to have. And now we'll see where they turn with the receiver coach. I've heard some names, but none that I really feel super comfortable putting out there at this time.
All the best to Dugan. So it would have been a nice to work out. We'll see how the wide receiver position plays itself out. Dugan's would have been fantastic. Tallahassee guy. Obviously, your number two option on the 99 team, but not going to lose a ton of sleep over a wide receiver coach at this point in time. Three kids, bud. Last time we talked, we had already had two players declare for the draft. Three more since have followed. Two of them expected, maybe even, I mean, I've certainly heard rumblings about all three, but why don't we just go ahead and discuss the three players and how that'll impact Florida State next year and maybe an idea as to where they might be drafted, if they're going to be drafted, and whether or not, in our opinion, it was the best choice.
Ryan Izzo was the one. And look, we had heard that he was considering us, but
there were some rumblings about this. There were.
But I didn't think they were that serious because he didn't have a very good year.
He did not have a good year from where you thought he would have projected from his first 2 years. No, in that regard, it was a bit of a letdown. I agree.
So he decided to go pro early. Now, maybe that's just, him feeling like maybe he's not in the new staff's plans as much. We'll have to see how much they use the tight end. They will operate for more spread sets. But, watching Oregon, they certainly had the tight end in the game an awful lot. So I do think Florida State will continue to use the tight end. They have certainly already extended some offers to tight end. So the idea that they won't use the tight end, I think, is a bit overblown. Is it a smart choice for him to go? Look, I usually am very pro go, right? Like, go, man. I do wonder how high he'll get drafted. The other two guys we'll talk about, we're in my mind, no doubt, absolutely go. But I wonder how high Izzo will get drafted. As far as the impact on the field, I think it hurts. He was a good player. He wasn't a superstar. They only have three tight ends on scholarship right now. It's Nasir Upshur, Trey McKitty, and then Alexander Marshall. Now you do have Gabe Neighbors, and there's no fullback in Willie Taggart's offense. So I think if you want to start calling Gabe Neighbors like an H-back tight end type, that might not be a bad idea because it's probably more reflective of what he'll be from this point going forward. And if you do that, then you have four. But they don't have a whole lot of proven stuff at tight end right now. Trey McKitty is the one who I think has the real high upside in that group.
Impact on recruiting. I mean, obviously, you can sell playing time as you just discussed with what's left on the roster. But any direct impact on a kid that's on the board or a kid that they might be able to get a little more traction with than they would have otherwise a couple nights ago before this was official.
I don't know who they're getting traction with. I know they do. Well, they would like to take a tight end in this class. That's something I do know from sources on the staff. But I don't think they're going to take a body just to take a body. If you get what I'm saying, but they have extended some offers and they offered a kid out of Cali. I think once the dead period lifts, and they can certainly extend offers. By the way, I think I misspoke on the last show. I didn't realize I said this, but I don't want to get people confused. In the dead period, you can call kids right now. It's over winter break. You're not necessarily blowing them up all the time, but you cannot do any face-to-face type stuff. You can't visit them at school. All that kind of stuff. The dead period lifts on the 11th. So if I said that, somebody said I said that on the last show, and if I did, I got to plead temporary insanity. They would like to take a tight end in this class. I don't know that they're actually going to be able to get the guy that they want to get.
Auden Tate?
I mean, smart choice, right? I think.
You'd think so. With his history of injuries, and I really like Tate a ton. A really impressive year, whether you qualify that with the amount of pain that he played through. Just an impressive kid, a guy who had a solid head on his shoulders from everybody that I've talked to, and wish him nothing but the best. And from a perspective, I would tell him to go. I think it's a smart choice, and I think that guy could be a really good representative for Florida State for many, many years to come. Really good player.
Good kid, good player. I think his best football is ahead of him, exactly. And a guy who is kind of always understood, what his game is, right? Being a big guy, he understands he's not faster than everybody, but he wins with his hands, with his body, with his size, with his positioning and length. That's a good player, man, and a guy that they really could have used next year. But you know, you should have won more ball games this year when you had these guys. And we'll talk about that in a second, but it hurts a lot. They only have five scholarship receivers on this team right now.
Mm-hmm.
It's Nyquan Murray, George Campbell, Keith Gavin, DJ Matthews, and Tamron Terry. Now, DeMarcus Adams is committed, and I think you have a good shot to bring in three more kids and make it a four-receiver class and get shoved up to nine receivers, which is fine. But you know, there's going to be a whole lot of playing time for those upperclassmen, for sure. Mm-hmm. They got to stay healthy, obviously. I think that some of this offense is going to set up to really benefit some of those guys. I think they're going to use George Campbell in a way that he wasn't used, you know, like to stretch the defense, really, and to make them respect the deep ball. But look, losing Tate and Izzo, I mean, those, you know where that really hurts you? In the red zone.
Absolutely.
Those are big bodies, man. That's going to
be predominant options down there for most of the year. Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, that will make this offense less good in the red zone than it could have been.
Tavares McFadden, not unexpected, in my opinion, at all, and maybe at times even his play on the field was reflective of that.
Oh, no doubt. Didn't have the greatest year. I don't know that his year was quite as bad as some people think it was. Now, look, it was not as good as his second year, but at the same time, you know, the second year had a little bit of the turnover luck where, you know, the guy's throwing the ball right at you and that kind of stuff. I do think that people continue to conflate how bad he was at punt return, and he was one of the worst. God, you should never have a punt returner at Florida State as bad as T-Mac.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, kickoff return, sure, he probably could have done it. Punt return, though, man, just he had no interest in doing it, you know?
None. Yeah, I started to take us down the road. We'll save that distraction, verbal distraction anyways. It was bizarre. I personally think played pretty well when the ball was in the air. A lot of questions that could have been asked in some of his run support and effort that he gave in that aspect of it. We said at the beginning of the year, he's not going to have the interception number that he had last year. He's not going to be probably anywhere near that. Some luck involved, and also teams knew, you know, that's not the side you throw a jump ball to. That's not the side of the field that you just kind of blindly test. And like you said, probably maybe not as much of a disappointment as a general fan base would think, but not necessarily the final year that you thought you would get out of McFadden.
No, definitely not. I mean, I feel like that's kind of
a pattern.
Yeah.
I mean, that happens
with a lot of these guys.
Particularly in their third year, maybe in the secondary. Yeah.
I mean, so recruiting wise, I don't think this has much impact. Everybody expected him to go anyway. I think he fully expected to go. I think that, like, he was going no matter what, to be honest. And I think that's the right call. I think he'll probably be a pretty good pro and will test really, really well at the combine and get drafted a lot higher than a lot of people listening to the show will think that he should. As far as their secondary numbers, they have five corners right now. Carlos Becker, assuming he plays corner, we'll see. Labonte Taylor, Kyle Myers, Stanford Samuels III. And then obviously Ontario Wilson, the kid they signed last year out of Georgia, who redshirted. He may have gotten the medical shirt. And then also Asante Samuel Jr. and Anthony Litton. So those guys are already signed. So they really have, seven? That's a good number right there, and a lot of talent in that group. You know, if they can get another corner in this class, I think they would like to. As far as the other guys in the secondary, you know, A.J. Westbrook, Calvin Bruton, Cyrus Fagan, Hamza Nasruldeen, DeKalen Brooks, and then Jaden Woodby, who we'll talk about in a little bit. But that's a secondary with a ton of talent, man. If you're Harlan Barnett, you got to be coming in here thinking, oh, man, this is going to be pretty
nice. Pieces right there to work with.
Yeah, no doubt.
Speaking of pieces to work with, Bud, today is the 7th, which means the long-discussed For the Table app has since gone live. Just want to remind people that will be maybe your first look at getting food from Madison Social, Centrale, Township delivered. Alcohol as well from Township is on the table, pardon the pun there. So just an incredible thing. I know that's something that they've been working on for a while, and are happy to be able to launch ForTheTableApp.com. Just another fantastic addition to the line of services offered by our friends at the For the Table Restaurant Group. And expect that to be utilized frequently by many a returning student this time of year.
That app is just badass.
Well said. ForTheTableApp.com. We will certainly talk to you about many other things that Madison Social and those guys have planned, but that's something they've been working on for a while. Fantastic addition. And why don't we go ahead and remind people that that's now live and available, and go ahead and give you the 10-day reminder on Reuben Day, which is the 17th. So we'll go a little bit of the old, a little bit of the new there. Look, maybe one of the better sandwiches that you're going to be able to find, and now a new way to be able to have that sandwich come present and occur in your life. So nice little addition to the wrinkle of services that they offer. And something that we'll be talking about more in the future to come.
It'd be cool if you could, like, if you had the app and it could give you a Reuben alert.
You could probably do that. I mean, they probably can do that.
Like severe weather alerts, except exactly. It's like, you know.
Yeah, we are 48 hours away from from Reuben. That's I like it. I like your idea there, Bud. So from there, Bud, let's move on to a couple things here. You have been flying around, racking up some frequent flyer miles and hotel points. So you've been out in Texas recently for the Army All-American game. Why don't you just give us an idea as to what you witnessed out there, both kids that are committed to Florida State, and I know one kid in particular recently made a decision yesterday to attend Oklahoma, and maybe Florida State was more involved in that than we would have necessarily expected.
Yeah. So the first thing is that Jaden Woodbey, by the way, you do say it would be, by the way. I know a lot of people have asked us, is it would be? Is it would be? It's would be. He just keeps getting better.
Mm-hmm.
I got to tell you, I was very impressed. Like I saw him at the Nike camp. When was the Nike LA camp? I think it was in March. It was one of the earlier ones because I remember it was a little bit cold. And I got to tell you, I wasn't blown away. Like, he wasn't bad. He just wasn't. Like what at the time, I think he was an Ohio State commit or very much about to be. And in my head, I kind of thought, huh, like he's good. I don't know that he's like Ohio State, go get him immediately, like, you know, out of state level good.
Mm-hmm.
Although he's, you know, obviously he's a really good, you know, track athlete as well. He's a fast guy. What he showed this season as a senior on the field and pads, and then also this week, really impressed me. I mean, you're talking about a guy who's going to be a safety, but they dropped him down. They played him in the slot a lot. He has good size. He's a fairly thick kid. You know, really runs well, obviously. You know, we already knew that part. But the change of direction and the physicality and the instincts, man, I got to tell you, he's improved an awful lot. And I was talking to some other guys at the Army game who were there with me at the Nike event in March, and they were all like, man, I got to tell you, I didn't see him being this good this soon. And so that's really good news for Florida State, because there's some guys in that secondary, especially in that safety spot, who are just bosses, man. I mean, Homs is going to be really good. I think Cyrus is going to be good. You put those three together, and then, you know, Carlos Becker, who is a really good athlete, I think he'll be re-energized underneath defensive backs coach, and you know, he has 2 years left. Miami's running kind of a spread. Florida's definitely running the spread. Clemson runs the spread. I mean, the three teams you're playing run the spread, or your three main rivals. It's going to be nice to have a lot of different safeties to utilize against them. It's going to be real nice.
Yeah, really nice kid who's made a lot of progress. We've recapped the story that was and how impressive of a get it was for Taggart and his staff, and really, you know, for all intents and purposes, the first real recruit of the Taggart era. A kid that, look, you know, we're not going to sugarcoat it. There's no special prize that you get for second place in recruiting. But a kid that Florida State really put itself in play and came, you know, I don't want to say a close second, but put themselves very much in the final decision of a kid who made his decision yesterday to ultimately attend Oklahoma.
Right. Okay. So Bookie Hiles, he's from Englewood, California. A kid I really like, by the way. Like, not only as a player, but as a person. I mean, some of these recruits, you're like, all right, whatever, get the quotes, get out. You know, it's just, they're whatever. He's a pretty smart kid. And a kid like you as an adult can have a conversation with, and, you know, it's not like pulling teeth. I got to tell you, I was a little bit surprised at how involved Florida State was in his recruitment. You know, because FSU wasn't on him, back when Jimbo and them were there, they didn't offer, they didn't really talk to him much. So when he took that visit up to Florida State, I kind of thought, we'll see. I mean, they haven't been on him that long, and can you really? Because we knew he liked Oklahoma a whole lot, and his roommate and best friend T.J. Pledger, one of the other Cali kids at IMG, kid who came across the country, and they formed a pretty good friendship, is going to Oklahoma and is one of the better recruiters for Oklahoma. I mean, he's publicly on social media for Oklahoma. Privately, he'll tell you how great Oklahoma is, et cetera. That's his roommate at IMG, and they visited OU together. So I talked to him after the final Army practice and said, "Hey, do you know where you're going?" He's like, "Yeah, I think so. I'm pretty sure." I said, "All right, I know you don't want to reveal it, but I want to shoot a video. Give me your, you have what, six finalists?" He's like, "Yeah." I said, "Look, I don't have time to shoot six endings to this video." He's like, "No, I don't want to do that either."
I got time, man.
I said, "So, yeah." I said, so give me the two or three that that it really came down to." And he said, "Florida State and Oklahoma." He goes, let's throw Clemson in there." I said, "Okay." So we shot it. You could see the Oklahoma video on SBN Recruiting, the Twitter handle, put it out on Sunday morning. And he talked about the length of the relationship he had with their DBs coach there, and obviously his best friend TJ is going there as well, and he thinks it's a place you can go and focus on ball and not get in trouble and all that stuff, which is good. But I got to tell you, I was shocked at how – just listen to this, all right? And I apologize for the sound quality. There's construction going on at the field where one of the Army practices was. Listen to this and tell me – like the way he talks and the stats he knew about Florida State are not those of
a cursory interest.
Yeah. Yes, exactly. Yeah. And they're of somebody that's really strongly considering a school and really did their research and went to town on studying up on Florida State. And I was surprised. So look, while they didn't get him, and that's not good. You want to land the kid. The degree of difficulty was ratcheted up pretty high. You're trying to beat out a playoff team that he's had a relationship with for forever. That's a lot closer to home than Tallahassee is. But I think this is very encouraging, man, that how good of an impression they made in such a short time. Because look, what they were telling him, the message they had, it stuck. So I'm going to play this
here with Brendan Radley Hiles. First of all, congratulations on being invited to the Army All-America game. It's quite an honor.
Appreciate it.
Why Florida State?
FSU. Coach Tag. Coach Tag is he's a great guy. This is that's where he wanted to be all along. Now he's there, so he's going to set up shop here. He's going to do great things in Tallahassee. Why not be a part of it? So that would be a reason why I would go to Florida State. And guys like Levante Taylor, Stanford Samuels, Cyrus Fagan, all those guys. On my official, they brought me in. And we were just chilling in the room. We just started mastering our goals and stuff. Talking about our goals and where we want to be in life. And that conversation, kind of sparked my energy towards them. I like that. I like to, reach for the highest level, and go get it. They've had, almost like two corners go for the last, I think, since 2013, go every year. There's some type of, DB out of their secondary room. So, that's not a lot of statistics, that any other school can say. Yeah, so Florida State is DBU to me.
What about JD? Has Wood been recruiting you hard this week?
Me and Woody just been talking about other stuff. He's going to Florida State, so it'll be cool to go to school with him. But we've been knowing each other since we was kids, so we just been out here playing, just having fun out here in Texas.
All right, so I mean, look, that he knows how many draft picks Florida State has had at DB, and he knows that they have more of those guys than anybody else, and he knows Ramsey and Rhodes and those dudes, and I think the connection that he had as well with the current players on the roster who are still selling the school hard and have clearly bought in. Look, that's all encouraging, man. And if they can carry that forward to a full cycle under Willie Taggart, I think you're going to have some really strong recruiting results, even given the very difficult changing landscape of recruiting right now, with Miami being closer to full strength and Georgia not screwing around and Florida, I think, going to be better. Just schools like that. Continuing to improve. It's the landscape is much tougher, but I do think that they are going to have a really good recruiting staff in Tallahassee. And I think that Bookie's comments there, they indicate that. He could have just given me empty platitudes and didn't. I mean, that was interesting.
Very. One thing you mentioned there is Ramsey and Rhodes. Man, Florida State's going to have some real – I mean, first of all, you've got, what, the two all-pro DBs are Florida State guys. But I know you've been traveling. I know you didn't get to watch all the Buffalo-Jacksonville game today. And
thank God.
You didn't miss a masterpiece of football by any means. But I put out a tweet at one point. It's not a ton that I referenced my Twitter account or read from it verbatim. But I said, on a field loaded with 22 people with world-class genetics – my Lord, Jalen Ramsey is just a different level of athlete, and that guy is unbelievable. I mean, I honestly think you could show a football game to like a bunch of Norwegian people who are not familiar with the sport at all, and within three or four plays be like, yeah, that number 20 is just a different character out there. I think he's pretty quick to being one of the best defensive backs in the game, maybe the best defensive back in the game, and I don't think your whole distance from him being one of the better defensive players in the game. I talk about this fairly frequently, Bud, that, you know, sometimes if you happen to grab a type of kid, he almost pays you like recruiting dividends and can impact kids' decisions for years to come. I really think you've got that in Jalen Ramsey, and that is it's like repetitive and it's gets lost in the wash, but that seriously is one of the best athletes I've ever seen in my life, and it is impressive to see him turn into the corner that he has. There was a play today that he gets OPI from Kelvin Benjamin, who's, I think, listed at 6'6", 245. That's probably pretty friendly.
Yeah.
Ramsey takes a two-hand shove in the chest that's enough to warrant an OPI call. And honestly, Bud is impacted. I think he gets pushed back about 4 inches. Ends up breaking up the play anyway. I mean, he's just – the stuff that you see that guy do is unbelievable. And I know there's this whole talk about DBU, whatever. I think that's a silly conversation. I don't think that's one that you even need to concern yourself with. But what those two guys being Ramsey and Rhodes, have done on Sunday, and that has a chance to really – put you in a place for kids on the national scene that maybe you wouldn't otherwise have a chance with.
I mean, absolutely. And guys who are you know, pretty vocal in support of FSU. I mean, you got dudes balling all over the league right now, and they're not saying go sign with Jimbo at Texas A&M. They're saying, you know, hey, go to Florida State. Now, I do think that's interesting, by the way, on that point too. Initially, a lot of these guys were so mad that Jimbo was leaving, right? Like mad at the school. But it seems to have changed really fast. So I do think that there's been some sort of outreach, not formal, but kind of informal, that word kind of got around, hey, this is what was really going on, mm-hmm. You know?
Yeah.
Like
yeah.
Jimbo did the kids on his team wrong this year. And I think those NFL guys understand that now. And so they're pretty, you know, pro-FSU. You got Terrence Brooks tweeting today. You know, he likes what's going on at Florida State, you know, Darby and those guys. It wouldn't surprise me to see Ramsey, you know, be very pro Tennessee as well.
Yeah,
just because, you know, he's from Tennessee. Pruitt is now the head coach at Tennessee. The other thing that makes Ramsey so good is that he really plays with great technique. And when you combine an elite-level athlete with a guy who doesn't take a lot of false steps, he's just always in position to use the athleticism. That's a big-time trait right there. You know, Rhodes is – like, if you put Ramsey and Rhodes next to each other, Rhodes looks a lot bigger, I think. But they're both so good. And for Florida State, I do think they're going to play up the DBU thing a lot going forward. I mean, you're talking historically, they have an argument. Currently, they certainly have it, mm-hmm. I think. I mean, if both your guys are on the All-Pro team. You know, that's something I think they should do a better job of, is talk about, you know, how they've been DBU forever, right? LSU has not been DBU.
Right.
For 40 years.
Right.
And it's not really helpful if you used to be DBU and you're not anymore. But if you have that tradition, past and present, I think that can help you in recruiting. And I would absolutely, if I run Florida State social media stuff, I'd put out more stuff about showing some of the old film to the current film, mm-hmm. and kind of through the ages type thing.
Yeah, absolutely. Ramsey, one of the quotes from him after the game was what he thought, you know, whether or not his expectation for playoff atmosphere was what he thought it would be. His quote was, "It was what I thought it would be. As soon as I got out there for warmups, the energy felt like I was at Florida State again. So I had that swagger going, and it was nice." Okay, Jalen, I appreciate that. Fully expect Florida State to leverage the hell out of that for recruiting purposes. And that dude is just on another level. It's just ridiculous what he's turned into in year two already.
Yeah, I think that'll help a lot. The remaining stuff from the Army game, I think people who listen this long are real serious diehards, you know, and so they may appreciate some of this stuff. I didn't get to watch the East team practice. Obviously, I got to see both teams play. I got on NBC a couple times, I think, by the way, on the sideline, so that was cool. From the West team, I like the Hufanga kid a lot. I think USC is getting a total stud in JT Daniels. I mean, the JT Daniels to Amon-Ra St. Brown combination is going to just absolutely rip up the Pac-12. And for people who don't know, JT was the QB at Modern Day. And he ended up having enough credits to where he could graduate in only 3 years instead of four. And so he's already enrolling at USC and is going to take part in the quarterback position, assuming that the quarterback they have there now goes pro. And Amon-Ra St. Brown is the little brother of Equanimeous St. Brown, who was at Notre Dame, and also he has another brother who played ball. Both really good players. He's going to play early and light up college football early because he has enough athleticism combined with a really some of the best technique and feel for the game that I've ever seen out of a high schooler. I mean, just the guy, like, he doesn't look like a freak athlete, although he's certainly strong and fast and probably like 5'11 and a half. The ability for him to use spacing and understand how to vary tempo and how to get on top of DBs and then, you know, get them to back off, it really impressive stuff from him. So look for those guys out on the West Coast. I love the signing of Mark Pope from Miami. I think he's going to be a really good player for the Canes. And I think Jaren Williams is going to be a good player for them as well. I'm trying to think of other guys. You know, I think Buki will do really well at Oklahoma. And then I haven't talked on the show really about this, but Texas is signing arguably the most talented class of defensive backs ever. Like in the history of the recruiting era. I think they have three of the top five safeties and two of the top six corners in the nation.
Okay.
I mean, that's...
Well, okay, Texas. Damn.
Yeah, that's ridiculous. And I do think that if those guys pan out, Texas is going to be able to play man-to-man defense in the Big 12 in a way that the other schools in the Big 12 simply can't and don't have the personnel to do. So that's going to be something to watch, not next year, but you know, come 2019, 2020 on the field, just watch for that. Because if those guys pan out, I mean, that's – and in the Big 12, you see so much spread that you can literally play all five dudes at one time. You know, three safeties, mm-hmm. two corners, plus probably another nickel. Gosh, or, you know, I mean, another slot guy. That's a really good class of DBs. And, you know, look what Georgia did to Oklahoma in the second half. Now, Oklahoma made some mistakes, certainly, but, you know, UGA, they manned them up, dude.
Mm-hmm.
And they held them to, you know, a lot lower output rather than, you know, UGA winning that game thinking they had to play zone. Which it was not a bad assumption, to be honest. It didn't work out, but I think I would have probably made the same one. Didn't play the zone all that well. Oklahoma ripped it up, and then they were like, well, screw it. I guess we just got to go man-to-man, and it worked. So I think Texas is going to be able to do that in that league more than anybody in pretty short order.
Interesting. Just something to keep an eye out on. Yeah, that is a ridiculous concentration of talent, and anytime I hear the words come out of your mouth that you're looking at, you know, one of the best ever – you know, best ever hauls, that's something to nod ahead to and listen. That's something that I look for. That's a, you know, it doesn't shock me. You knew that that would come as far as a real surge in recruiting with the head coach that they have. But we'll see how much that translates onto the field and what they're ultimately able to do with that out in that conference.
Oh, another kid to keep an eye on here. Florida State has already offered this guy, but just, you know, for the real recruiting nerd out there, Chance Williams, C-H-A-N-T-Z. He's at Oakleaf in Jacksonville. He also has a teammate who is pretty solid as well, Jalen Rivers, an offensive lineman. They're both at Oakleaf. Chance Williams has a chance to be a really nice edge rusher. He's a 2019. I was in the Alamo Dome for about 12 hours what day is today?
Sunday evening, we're recording.
Okay. Yeah. On Friday, then I was in the Alamo Dome for about 12 hours and, you know, looking at all the 2019, 2020, 2021 kids. And, you know, it's just a reminder of how quickly these guys go from people nobody knows about to household names.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's so many kids. I'm like, all right, who is that? Who is that? That kid wasn't even on my list. And I had a list going into this thing, 581 names. So, you know, and I've got a bunch of additions on here. Just a bunch of kids, a bunch of good football players, and a lot of them from Florida. I think that, you know, for instance, Greg Fry was able to go to the event.
Always helps.
Here's the rule on that.
Yeah.
Yeah. That doesn't suck. If your kid is playing in it, you can go to it. So Texas A&M's defensive ends coach, his kid was playing in it, so he could go. Frank Wilson, the UTSA head coach, could go because his kid was playing it. You know, Jimbo did this last year, very notably at the Adidas tournament, and set up the you know, the lawn chair there at like the intersection of four fields. You can watch a bunch of different games. You know, pretty smart there. When Trey was playing in his son was playing in a 7-on. So that's kind of cool. A lot of good Florida players there, and I do think that Florida State will A, finish this class strong, and B, I think they will they'll start out a really, really strong 2019 class as well, because they're going to be able to take a big class and they're going to be able to offer playing time at a lot of different positions. And that's not something they've been able to do necessarily quite as much in the last couple of years.
All right, man. I think that's probably a pretty good natural end for this podcast. Just something we were able to catch up on. I think we said it'd be probably 3 or 4 days before we could record again, and it's ended up being exactly that. So, you know, we'll keep you up to date as we approach the traditional signing day. And still, you know, still a lot of pieces moving around, and still a lot to be kind of finalized when it comes to the end, you know, the end result of what this staff looks like. Although we certainly have most of the major positions filled at this point. So, but appreciate your time as always. Want to thank the listeners. Thank all the support that we've received. Tons of pictures just in the last 24 hours of people incorporating Louisiana hot sauce into their meals, or where they found it at particular restaurants. That's awesome.
Including Jameis.
Yes.
See,
I was
going
to say that. And even one Jameis Winston. So that's a hat tip to you there, Jameis. Jameis is familiar with Louisiana. Absolutely. And good taste there for a little birthday celebration.
All right, buddy. We'll talk to you again. We'll probably do an episode, maybe gives people some Friday afternoon listening or something later in the week.